History was made this week as a delegation of religious leaders from South Korea crossed into the communist-ruled North on an official visit. The Conference of Religion for Peace delegation, led by Catholic Archbishop Kim Hee-jung, stated the rare trip is aimed at helping bring the two Koreas back onto a path of reconciliation and cooperation. Lord David Alton is a member of the British House of Lords. A longtime campaigner for human rights in North Korea, he is also in Pyongyang this week to deliver an address at the new University of Science and Technology, founded by a South Korean Christian once condemned to death by the North. He notes the significance of the religious leader's visit to Pyongyang in the week that the Universal Church celebrates the memory of the Korean martyrs.
Today we're speaking, of course, to Lord Alton, who is a very familiar voice with our listeners here on Vatican Radio. You're on a flying visit, literally, through Rome. We're very fortunate to have you with us. And you were saying, picking up from last time, you were just back from Korea, and now you're going again to Korea.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's a great pleasure to be with you again. But it's significant that in this week of the Feast of the Korean Martyrs, only yesterday the Universal Church was celebrating the memory of perhaps between 8 and 10,000 people who died for their faith, mainly in the 19th century in Korea, notably St. Andrew Kim, who was the first Korean to be ordained a priest and who was executed at the age of 25. It's significant that to this very day there are still in North Korea some 300,000 people in the camps there, according to the United Nations. Many of them are held as prisoners because of their political or their religious beliefs. 2 million people died in North Korea during the famine in the 1990s, and the most recent reports are pointing once again to malnutrition and stunted growth, according to our own British ambassador, who's based in Pyongyang. He's seen first-hand accounts of that. I'll be speaking in North Korea at an interesting new university called Pyongyang University of Science and Technology. It's interesting because it's the very first public private university. It's interesting because it's been founded by a South Korean Christian and who was initially sentenced to be executed by the North Koreans and then was invited back. A man who, in the Korean War, when some 3 million people died, saw almost all of the 800 people in his unit die. He made a pledge that if he survived, and he was only one of eight who did survive, that one day he would try to do something for peace in North Korea. And he then went back, and Dr. James Kim created this university. I visited it last year, and there are now 600 students there being taught in English. So in a situation that's full of darkness, it's nice to be able to report that there is at least one little glimmer of hope, and that maybe that will, in years to come, help to transform the situation in that country.
In fact, as you pointed out, there have been over 10,000 martyrs in the Korean church, but the Korean church is also one of the fastest growing churches in Asia. It's, you know, tripled the number of Christians, the number of baptized Christians within the last 10 years. How would you, as someone who's been there and witnessed the church both in the north, for what it's worth, and in the south, how would you describe it?
Well, in the north, under the surface, it reminds me a little bit of the English Catholic Church during penal times, where people thought they'd wiped out Catholicism, but it was there beneath the surface, waiting for the day for the Catholic spring, as Cardinal John Henry Newman put it in the 19th century, the day in which it could flower again. And I was struck in a place called Onju, about 60 kilometres north of Pyongyang, when I asked the mayor there if there were any churches, and she said they were all destroyed during the Korean War, and I said, well, are there any believers? And she said, yes, there was a Catholic church here, and people still meet in the rubble of that building. And I said, what, every week? And she said, every week. And of course, there have been no priests permitted into the country in 60 years. And during my last visit, I was also allowed to visit the one authorized Catholic church building, which is in Pyongyang. A service was held there, and this time they allowed me to speak to the congregation. And I had the chance to give them greetings from the Universal Church, and I said I knew that they were very much in the heart and the mind of Pope Benedict, and that we're all waiting for the day when the North Korean church again will be allowed to come out from the catacombs. It's a silent church at the present time. And when you look beyond the 38th parallel into South Korea, you see an extraordinary church. You see a church that is expanding. About 12% of South Koreans are now Catholic. It's the biggest missionary church outside of the United States in the world. The Koreans are the most amazing people, and they bring great love and they bring great dignity and enthusiasm in witnessing for their faith. I visited the brand new Catholic hospital. It's the biggest in the country, in Seoul, doing a brilliant job. The Catholic University, the schools there, they provide a huge amount of the social infrastructure. But they were also, as emerged in the obituaries of Cardinal Kim. They were also the reason why democracy came about in South Korea. And Koreans haven't forgotten that, that when the tanks arrived and the demonstrators and the protesters calling for democracy sheltered in the Catholic Cathedral, the cardinal stood at the doors and said, you can have the protesters, but first you come over me, and then over the fathers, and then over the sisters, and then you can have them. And it broke the determination of the military regime to persist, and that's how democracy emerged in South Korea. So the church in Korea has an amazing record. I hope that the next Youth Day, International World Youth Day, which was so important in Madrid this year, I hope that maybe the next one will be in Asia, and we're better than Seoul. I think it would be a great thing for everybody if young Catholics from around the world were able to go to Seoul, but also it would be a wonderful affirmation of the silent church in the north of Korea and an affirmation of this really energetic church in the south.
In fact, the lay congress by the Pontifical Council for the Laity was held most recently last August, not August gone, but August 2010, in Korea, and drew together all the churches and lay workers within the church in Asia, and really was a very vital and vibrant congress. Your love for Korea and for the Korean church, where does it come from, first of all? And secondly, have we got something to learn, we here in the modernised, developed, secularised world?
Well, we have a lot to learn. It was Tertullian, wasn't it, who said the blood of martyrs is the seed of the church. And I think the real suffering and sacrifices that people have made for their faith is deeply inspiring to people like me, and I think we in the West who take our liberties and freedoms so much for granted. So the Korean church has a lot to say to us at any number of levels. But I think it wasn't that I started off by having knowledge about Korea, or even that I thought this was something I could do anything about. But a young man came through London who'd escaped from North Korea, and he was due to meet a colleague of mine, and she was away from London at the time, and someone from his office, from her office, telephoned me and said, would I see him instead? And I said, but I don't know anything about North Korea. And they said, well, no one knows much about North Korea, so that's all right. Will you see him? And I said, okay, we'll bring him in. And I met this young man, and he explained to me how his wife and two children had died during the famine, and then as he attempted to leave the country across the River Yalu into China, he lost his other son, went back for him and found him dead as well. He lost everybody. And he has been going in and out of North Korea ever since, like a Korean Raoul Wallenberg, helping people to escape through the underground railway, as it's called, that operates through house churches in China, enabling people to get out of North Korea. His story I found so inspiring, but I felt it needed a wider hearing. And I didn't know what I could do for him. I explained I wasn't the government, and I started telling him all the things I'm not. And I thought, this won't do. So I said, look, I'll tell your story in Parliament. I'll find a way of trying to get a debate about the situation. And so I called a debate, and our name came up in the ballot that we had, and it was about the security and human rights situation in North Korea. And I told his story. And as a result of that, the North Koreans protested. Their ambassador in London rang me and said, I've been listening to too many Americans. And I said, I've not spoken to any Americans, but I've spoken to a North Korean. Who was that? He said. And I said, well, I can't tell you who it was. Obviously, I wasn't going to tell him that. But I said, I tell you, it's a North Korean who's told me about the situation in the country. I said, but you can come and tell me your side of the story, which he did. And then in the course of it, I said, well, how could anyone verify if anything you've said is true when you don't allow people into the country? And he said, well, would you go? And I wondered, yes, but would I come back? But I said, yes, I'll go. And I persuaded my colleague, Lady Cox, Baroness Cox, to come with me. And we took a young man, James Maudsley, a young Catholic, who had been in Burma and spent 18 months in solitary confinement in prison because of his human rights work there. He came as our secretariat, and we wrote a report, and we created a parliamentary North Korea group when I returned, and I was elected as chairman of that 7 years ago. And since then, we've held a lot of hearings in Parliament where we've given people the chance to come and tell their individual stories. But we've also done what I wrote in the visitor's book at the 38th parallel. I said, it's better for men to build bridges than to build walls. That's what we've been trying to do, a process of constructive but critical engagement, being affirmative where we can, being in dialogue and trying to build some kind of process of reconciliation, but also insisting that there are non-negotiables as well. And some of those include an absolute belief in human rights, that every person is made in the image of God. And on the back of that come certain liberties and freedoms as enunciated in the 1948 Declaration on Human Rights, one of which is the right to life, but another of which is the right to freedom of worship and freedom of religious expression. So my hope is, and again in this week, when religious leaders from South Korea have been permitted to North Korea, a group of them went together to North Korea, my hope is that we're beginning to see some kind of change, and it would be nice to think that as a result of that young man's visit those 7 years ago, that maybe that's been a small part of the process.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.